Welcome to Diverse Joy, a podcast where two so-called experts put the joy back into diversity conversations. My co-host is the illustrious Prince Charming, Dr. Will Cox.
And my co-host is the mystical, magical Cinderella's fairy godmother, Dr. Amber Nelson. And for this episode, we have invited back to the podcast our dear friend, Rocket Raccoon, also known as Nikki Vandermeulen. Nikki is a defense lawyer specializing in work with kids that have disability or accommodations needs. We also just heard that she was actually sworn into the Supreme Court bar by none other than RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg herself. Wow. So exciting.
Wow.
Nikki is also on the Madison Metropolitan School District School Board, and we sometimes will abbreviate Madison Metropolitan School District as MMSD, in case you hear us say that. That's our school board here in Madison, Wisconsin. So she's on that school board. And in fact, she is the first ever openly autistic person to be elected to a school board in the United States.
It's amazing.
And, you know, as someone who is very politically active and through her law practice and her political campaigns, she is always doing exciting things. She just showed us pictures of her with Obama, with President Biden. I know that last year, a couple years ago now, she went to the White House's Hanukkah party. Very exciting. But also, Nikki is an autistic person and also has cerebral palsy. And so throughout her life has had to break down walls and often fight for the simple right to be included in schools up through law school. And that's going to relate to what we end up talking about today. But before we get there, we always like to start by sharing our joy. So, Nikki, what is bringing you joy lately?
Rocket Raccoon will always has and always will bring me joy.
Love it.
As he always says, there's nothing on this planet, ain't nothing on this planet like me. But me.
That's right.
And I truly can relate to that.
Yeah. And when he said that, it was such a nice, I mean, it was nice for him as a raccoon, anthropomorphic raccoon, but then it's this nice kind of diversity mantra as well. You know, you have unique experiences that you bring to the table.
Absolutely. And it's not just me. I've been following them on a lot of social media sites. There are a large number of autistic individuals who have posted on Rocket and how he shows what it's like and that he accepts himself.
Yeah.
And that's some of the hardest thing for us to do.
It's one of the biggest messages that I love hearing from Amber, the kind of self-love piece that I know she always centers in a lot of these discussions that we've had on the podcast.
I love that. I mean, Rocket brings me a lot of joy, and Guardians on the whole. There's so many things about Rocket that brings me joy, so I can really appreciate that. And I love that it is also a Marvel movie, which ties into my joy for this month. So March is two things. Most importantly, it is Disability Awareness Month.
Yes.
First and foremost, it is Disability Awareness Month. But it is also what a lot of folks on social media call Disney Bounding Month. And Disney Bounding, for those of you who don't know what it is wearing like regular clothes inspired by Disney characters. So the colors, the kind of styling, things that are inspired by different Disney characters. So again, today I'm dressed as the fairy godmother. And
those of you who are audio listeners, you'll be able to see a picture of us in these bounding, maybe bounding plus costumes. We're taking it a little more than that. On the website and on the page for this episode.
You can check out the furry tail even.
The furry tail,
Nikki's raccoon tail.
Yes, Nikki's raccoon tail.
And check it out in the video version as well.
Absolutely. But yeah, it is so much fun. So the Disney Bound on social media puts it out every year for March, a different inspiration for every single day, and I do it every single day. Like, I have so much fun, even if nobody else knows that I am dressed as the fairy godmother at work or wherever. It brings me so much joy, and it makes it even better when I finally tell folks why I'm dressed the way that I'm dressed or how I'm dressed, and like how much it just lights people's face up and they smile like, oh my gosh, you totally are the fairy godmother. I'm like, I know. Thank you.
So I'm thinking, like, on the visual side, maybe we could get our producer, Eric Roman Binding, to do like a whole month's worth of your outfits. Like the episode comes out at the beginning of March, but he could do last year's.
Yeah.
Because I love Amber's social media all March. Every day is like, oop, it's Winnie the Pooh. Oop, it's Cinderella. Oop, it's Tiana. Like,
It's so much fun. So it is bringing me joy. I get very excited about it. Well, how about you? What is bringing you joy?
Thinking about your bounding head this month brings me joy every time. But also, one thing I've enjoyed for many years is throwing big theme parties. Along with my fiance, our producer, Eric Roman Binding, we throw these big theme parties, maybe once a year. We had a few years back, it was a tea party, and we had stuff from like Alice in Wonderland, Mad Hatter kind of tea party, the Boston Tea Party, the letter tea. Every interpretation.
Awesome.
Or space party, Star Wars party. But we are 2 days away from the Heroes and Villains party, which I'm so excited about it. And I'm so excited you two are coming to it.
Absolutely.
And Nikki is going to be re-debuting her Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
I'm excited to see everyone's costumes. It's a nice chance for all our different friends to come and kind of dress up, be a little silly, and get together and have lots of fun. Yeah. So I'm going to be... what am I going to be? Oh, I'm going to be Maleficent. A villain, a male version of Maleficent. Yes. And Amber, you're...
I'm going to be Cruella de Vil.
We got our Disney villain.
Gotta be a Disney villain, yes.
So we set up our whole house. We're in the process of. Yeah. Half the house is going to be the villain's lair. It's going to be dark and purple and green. Mm. And we have a poison ivy mannequin and a Borg queen mannequin for a Star Trek villain and all that kind of stuff. And then the other half is the hero section. It's all bright primary colors. We have a big Superman mannequin and lots of other fun stuff.
Lots
I don't want to spoil the fun for you too, but lots of cool things. And it'll be great. And I think we'll have pictures for that before this episode comes out. So those of you watching the video feed, you'll be able to, we'll stick some pictures in so you can see what it looked like. That's bringing me so much joy.
I mean, it's bringing me joy too. I'm super excited. This is going to be one of the first like actual parties that I get to go to.
Yes, we scheduled it to coincide with you being here.
So I cannot wait. But I'm really excited about our conversation with Nikki today. Yeah. There were so many things that came up in the last episode and the last time we were here. And so I'm excited for us to just kind of continue this conversation. And our topic today is really around social justice movements, right? And this idea of solidarity, cross movement solidarity, and how maybe even accommodations are universal and can help everyone, right? And so I wanted to start with two quick things. The first is the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA. So if you hear us say ADA, that's what we're referring to. And the definition of disability came out, the newest definition was in 1990, and it states a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activity. And I know there's some history there about how that's broadened the definition and was really monumental for accessibility for a lot of folks. But I wanted to put that out there just so we have a common language and understanding of what we're talking about when we say disability. I have this really great quote to start us off when we're talking about cross movement solidarity. And it's really talking about ableism. It says, a system assigning value to people's bodies and minds based on society, socially constructed ideas of normalcy, productivity, desirability, intelligence, excellence, and fitness. These constructed ideas are deeply rooted in eugenics, anti-blackness, misogyny, colonialism, imperialism, and capitalism. This systemic oppression leads to people and society determining people's value based on their culture, age, language, appearance, religion, birth or living place, health and wellness, and or their ability to satisfactorily produce or reproduce, excel, and behave. You do not have to be disabled to experience ableism. And so in thinking about that and thinking about social justice and civil rights movements, you have a lot to share and say.
Yes, I really do. The first thing we have to know though, is that disability is an intersectionality.
Absolutely.
Movement. 100%. If there is no civil rights movement, if there is no gay rights movement, there is no disability rights movement. We would not exist.
Yeah.
People keep wanting to see it in a vacuum.
Yep.
No. Everything must build on everything else.
Yep.
If you take the civil rights movement,
yep,
again, of seeing people as people. Also, disability rights movement was helped because people coming back from the Vietnam War who suddenly couldn't get into their own buildings, couldn't get into the VA, couldn't get into the veteran, get into the VFW, veterans of foreign wars. They couldn't get in the building.
Because they were in wheelchairs needed. Yeah. Just to clarify for the audience.
But because of that, they couldn't get in the door.
Yeah.
Literally.
Literally.
So these buildings are supposed to celebrate.
Yeah.
And they can't, and people cannot even get in.
Wow.
These are major, major issues.
And but, so, Nikki, you were saying, without the Black American Civil Rights Movement, without the gay rights movement, do you want to share some examples of that? How those
absolutely
movements then contributed?
I'm going to start with actually both civil rights and disability rights together.
Mm.
And that's the 504 protest.
Yes.
And the individual named as Brad Lomax. Took him over 60 years to get his due. Brad Lomax was a African-American male who had multiple sclerosis. He found out when he failed his draft physical.
And he was a Black Panther,
He was a Black Panther, and that is key. People always think Black Panther, violence. No. Black Panthers have founded WIC, the Women, Infant, Child service, so they could get food.
Yep.
They've created the free breakfast programs.
Yep.
United States, most of the voting rights, all of that are for the Black Panthers. People need to realize this is not, you cannot take the actions of a few people and use it to define a movement.
Yeah, that's the definition of stereotypes and tokenism, right?
Exactly.
That we talk about all the time.
Exactly.
People use stereotypes because they find it quicker and they end up causing more problems.
Absolutely.
And Brad Lomax, at the time, there were what were called 504 sit-ins.
Right.
504 is a section of the Civil Rights Act that stated that you couldn't discriminate on the basis of disability.
Right.
Problem is, it didn't mention the word disability.
Right.
It didn't mention who could be discriminated against, who would affect it, and in what. So it had
So what did it actually do?
It did absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Right, exactly.
It's you can't discriminate.
Right.
You can't discriminate, but there's no
What does that even mean?
What are you discriminating?
You have to define these things for it to have any power.
None of them were defined.
Wow.
So individuals with disability, like Brad Lomax, like hundreds of others, went, well, where do I fit? Like Ed Roberts, from Berkeley, who was a polio survivor who lived in an iron lung, but created the Berkeley movement.
Yeah.
These were all major, major issues. Well, all of these people got together and we're going to run sit-ins to take over government buildings to get attention. The New York sit-in failed. The Chicago sit-in failed.
Mm.
The LA sit-in failed. The San Francisco sit-in survived for over a month.
Yeah.
Why? Because the Black Panthers provided the generators, provided the food, provided the disability accommodations.
Yep.
Without the Black Panther Party, the 504 sit-in would never have succeeded, and the ADA would not have existed.
And from some of the notes that I have, was that this is the longest ever occupation of a federal building.
Still
is. So it was huge, still is, right? And that they were not only supported by the Black Panthers, but also the Chicano group, the Mission Rebels. They provided meals. That a gay community defense group known as the Butterfly Brigade also smuggled walkie-talkies. They received support from other local and national labor organizations.
AFL-CIO was very active with that as well.
Yep. And several grassroots organizations run by and for poor people, drug users or former drug users and formerly incarcerated people. Like, this was a massive...
Cesar Chavez even?
Yeah. Yeah. This was a massive movement and that... It had to be supported by all of these other movements too, in order for
we wouldn't have survived without it.
Right.
without that, we wouldn't have the language we have on disability.
Yeah.
And what they did is, for the first time, individuals with disabilities were asked how they wanted to be talked to, how they wanted to be treated, how they wanted to even be related to.
Right.
What term should I use?
Right.
Because for the longest time, they were using medical beliefs and medical diagnoses to describe people.
Right.
Well, you're not a disease.
Right.
You are a person.
Right. That is really good. Well, and that gets into like the medical model stuff and really around this idea that the medical model, in particular, when it refers to disabilities, is this, it's a problem to be fixed.
Exactly. Right? I am not dying.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to be cured.
Mm-hmm.
I want jobs. I want social activities. I want a family.
Right.
I don't want to use your magic wand here.
Right, right.
I don't want someone to wave it and erase who I am.
Right, right.
Because that is who I am.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But the 504 was just the start.
Yeah.
Now, after that, we had also the Berkeley movement almost simultaneously with Ed Roberts.
Mm.
He was a polio survivor. Mm. First to use a siphon pump device. A sip and puff device is a wheelchair that is controlled solely by mouth.
By mouth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And managed to make the Berkeley campus partially accessible, including the dorms, in which they got an iron lung moved in.
Wow. It was
the first time that college education was not seen as luxury, but actual necessity for people with disabilities, which is, and it wasn't that long ago, but probably the most successful and the most important movement was the Capitol Crawl.
Yeah, Capitol Crawl.
And it's also known as the one you've never heard of.
Mm.
A Capitol Crawl occurred in 1991. Everyone keeps saying, happened in the 80s. No, it didn't.
That's not that long ago.
I was 12 when the ADA passed.
Wow.
Until then, I could be thrown out of any school.
Wow.
In fact, I was thrown out of my preschool because I couldn't walk right.
Mm.
So people's like, oh, that's just back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. No, I'm 44 years old.
Yeah.
That's not a significant period of time.
No. And it is a significant period of your, like, that's all of your elementary school.
Yep.
That's part of your middle school education.
Correct.
That's a huge portion, especially in an important developmental time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And people don't seem to understand, oh, well, this was just a few things.
Right.
No. This actually gave me rights. And people often complain rightly about the United States and a lot of policies.
Yeah.
It's still the only country that's ever given me a Bill of Rights.
Mm.
I found this out during COVID when I researched, and when Trump was in office during COVID, and researched on COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
And found out there is one country in the world other than the United States that would accept me.
Wow.
And that's the state of Israel because I'm a Jew.
Wow.
Outside of that, I am considered a financial risk, financial burden in New Zealand. There's specific legislation in their constitution that states that autistic individuals are not allowed to emigrate.
Wow.
Aren't allowed to have what?
Emigrate. We are not allowed to move there.
Wow.
We are considered a financial burden to the economy of the country.
Wow. So you mentioned the crawl. Can you tell us a little bit more about what was that?
The Capitol Crawl was run by Jennifer. Mm. She was 8 years old. She was with a large group of protesters who wanted what was now known as the Americans with Disabilities Act to pass. It was a long shot, to say the least. No press would cover it. Nothing. Well, Jennifer had an idea. She climbed out of her wheelchair and others followed and crawled up the stairs of the U.S. Capitol, which was inaccessible at the time.
Wow.
Suddenly the press were like, we cannot ignore the hundreds of people in wheelchairs crawling up the stairs.
Right.
Because they couldn't get in the building that was designed for every person in the United States. And
supposedly.
They couldn't get in.
They
couldn't get in the door.
Wow.
And suddenly Congress realized we have a problem.
Yes.
Not a minor problem.
Yeah.
But a major one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also interesting you're talking about, like, that this happened in the 90s, the yeah. early 90s. And often we think about, oh, this was so long ago. And I've seen pictures of the Capitol crawl, and they're in black and white.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really, it's whether it's a tactic or whatever it is,
a tactic.
It distances people from that history.
Yeah,
and
know.
It is very recent. It is current. It is recent history. And they're continuing. There's so many things that we have to continue to do to keep the rights and to keep moving. Yeah.
People don't realize that during COVID, the first plan for the Republican Party would have stripped the ADA completely.
Mm.
It was called the HEALS Act. And what it would have done is it would have required individuals to prove they were discriminated against.
Mm.
Instead of having the individual accused prove that the company was the one who discriminated, it would put the burden on the victim.
Wow. Wow.
The amount financially would have crushed any disability suit and would have destroyed the ADA.
Mm.
So the other... the flip side of this that we wanted to talk about as well was that, you know, accommodations help everyone.
Right.
Exactly.
It's not just someone who needs the accommodation mm-hmm. to participate same as everyone else, but those of us who don't have a diagnosed disability mm-hmm. benefit from so many of the accommodations.
How many parents want to use a curb cut while they're taking their child in a stroller?
Right.
And to define mm-hmm. a curb cut, just in case people don't know that kind of shorthand, that's where, you know, there's the curb that if you're in a wheelchair, you can't get up that kind of step.
Right.
And the curb cut is the area kind of near crosswalks mm-hmm. where you can roll in or out. How mm-hmm. many people on bicycles who right. need to go, you know?
Anyone who uses a cane, anyone on a bike,
right.
anyone who's moving a large piece of furniture.
Right.
Do you know right. how beneficial that is? Right.
Or someone who has, so our friend Philip had a heel surgery a few mm. months ago and had to be on one of those little rolly things
scooters,
while he healed.
Scooter.
Well, as soon as that happens, mm-hmm. the world changes, or
right.
it feels like it
yeah.
changes. You find all the ways, like, wow, if I was in a wheelchair,
yeah.
I couldn't get up this.
Yeah.
I couldn't. Yeah. And so, yeah.
You know, I was going to say, yeah, absolutely. It's helpful for everybody, whether that is a physical accommodation or a mental health accommodation. Those
mm-hmm.
things are important to
closed captions.
I use closed captions all the time because I have some sensory, like with my ADHD, sometimes I have a hard time distinguishing like background from foreground sounds. Like
yeah.
all of these things can be helpful for everyone, regardless of what your quote unquote disability is or whether or not you have an identified disability. And it reminded me too, and I think we talked about this last time that you were
yep.
here, was again that disability is dynamic, right? In that, like, just because you didn't grow up disabled or having a disability doesn't mean that you won't have a disability at some point in your life, whether that's from a surgery or you're coming back from the war and you have a limb difference now, or you know, you've lost maybe the ability to walk or whatever
or
that might
pregnant.
Be, or you're pregnant.
Yep.
That these accommodations are not just for those who were born with a disability or that have something identified, but can help everyone at some point in their life, let alone the things that they use on a daily basis.
And that's the thing. Anyone can become disabled
exactly.
at any time.
And Amber said this a little, but it's something that I harp on sometimes,
yeah.
so I'm going to harp on it. So not just physical disabilities, but mental diagnoses
mental
as well. So if, for instance, the whole idea of like a mental health day that
yeah.
we kind of have now, well, there's some folks who have a mental disability or an emotional issue that they kind of need a little extra space to relax, to calm down, to
mm-hmm.
handle their stress.
Mm-hmm.
And just conversations around that have led to this idea of mental
yeah.
health days. And it's like, well, couldn't we all use some of that?
Absolutely.
Couldn't that benefit everyone? So let's figure out, let's make sure everyone are getting things, whether they need them because of a diagnosis or because maybe it's just a good thing for everyone to have.
Right, right. Well, and if it, if it can help somebody who has an identified disability or need a need for an accommodation, there's likely something
and
somebody
COVID
else.
COVID has changed everything.
100%.
And very simply, people not just on mental health issues, but on the fact that people are reevaluating their priorities in general. Is this worth it?
Absolutely.
I'm here on this planet for only a short time.
Yep.
Is this what I want to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. People are definitely reevaluating their values and prioritizing themselves differently, right? And so if we can think about our world, our workspaces in ways that can be adjusted. I always talk about like there is no going back to things the way they were pre-pandemic. There is only a new normal post-pandemic, post-George Floyd, post all of these things that we now have to rethink how we're doing our world differently.
Everything.
We have everything differently because we cannot go back to the way that things were for a variety of reasons. Physically, we can't. We are coming in a space that our cognitive and mental, emotional capacity has been totally, significantly impacted by COVID.
And
we do not have the same
million people.
Yeah, we do not have the same capacity that we used to anymore. We have to rethink what accommodations look like for
40-hour work week is not necessarily sustainable. It was created for a married couple and where one was able to stay home.
Right.
Yeah. That's no longer the case. That's not how society is.
Yep.
And people have to realize that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all of these accommodations are to make society better as a whole.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. So I think it's about time for our break.
Great.
So we will take a brief break and we'll be right back with you.
Great.
Excellent.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. So now it's story time. Story time. So as always, when we have a guest, we ask them to share one more negative story, difficult story, maybe a time that bias or discrimination occurred as part of our journey to always, you know, continue engaging with the negative things, even as our ultimate goal is infusing joy into diversity discussions. And then also a positive story, which is how then we kind of get back to that kind of joyful message. So, Nikki, you have a negative and a positive story for us.
Yes, I do. And the negative, as I said, people have to realize disability is intersectionality. When I ran, I'm on the school board, but ran for assembly, I lost in a 7-person primary. The other candidates were not my problem. What the problem was a lot of stereotypes. And I had two women who stated to me when I was campaigning that because I was a white woman and not in a wheelchair, I had no right to celebrate the Americans with Disabilities Act because I wasn't disabled enough. I still don't know what disabled enough means.
Right, exactly.
And that was hard, but realizing we must stress the intersectionality.
Yes.
Now, the good story starts sad and ends up really, really good.
That's
so
great.
Bear with me
okay.
on that.
That's great.
When I was 8 years old, Mr. Forrest was my student teacher, and I'm finally going to name him. Was my student teacher. And he didn't like kids who rock back and forth like I did.
Mm.
Like a lot of autistics, we use rocking as a calming motion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but this was 1986, and this was not known behavior at the time. So he waited until I flipped my desk over and ordered the entire class of 8-year-olds to laugh at me.
Oh, my gosh.
And being 8-year-olds, they did.
Wow.
Now, 2 weeks later, find out Mr. Forrest got a job in Fort Worth, Texas. And we're all supposed to write thank you notes. And 24 out of the 25 students did. And one didn't. I refused. My main teacher was smart enough to, Mrs. Lundeen was smart enough to ask me why. So I told her. One, she was so upset she didn't let him teach by himself for the last 2 weeks he was there.
Yeah.
But what she said is what made me an advocate, and it still sticks today, which is, well, Nikki, write a thank you note. When someone's done something nice for you, it's quite clear you have nothing to thank him for.
Wow.
To believe an eight-year-old in a time, this is in the 1980s here, was unheard of.
Yeah.
But it made me realize that my opinions matter.
Yep.
And that I didn't have to be treated that way. And frankly, I didn't have anything to thank him for.
Yeah, so good. That is really good.
So it ended up turning out positive.
Yeah.
Pretty much career defining. Wow. I decided on law pretty much at that point. Because I knew that that would protect me and I could still have those opinions and say, you can't treat me like that.
That's really good. That's really good.
That's wonderful.
Wow. Thank you, Nikki. Yeah. And oh man, I'm just sitting and reflecting on that. And I think that's so important. One, that we need to believe people about their experience, right? No matter their age, no matter their ability, we need to believe people. And I think that there's something really powerful about, obviously, career defining, inspiring for you to move on and say, like, how do I advocate for those who aren't believed and they have these negative experiences and nobody else is speaking up for them, or they're making them step in and thank somebody for causing trauma, right, and harming them, right? And we see that in a lot of culture, right?
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to say, hold on.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You don't get to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have the right to harm me and then make me thank you for it.
Right. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Well, I'm glad some teachers you had were supportive and
some were absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also was in the 1980s.
Right.
You have to understand the lack of knowledge at that time.
For sure. Context is important, for sure. Absolutely. Which makes this even bigger deal, right? Awesome. Well, do we have an audience question for us today?
Yes. Yeah. So this is a compiled audience question. This is a question that comes up a lot with disability-related discriminatory discussions. And as I sometimes do, as the listeners know, you know, we phrase the question sometimes in a very blunt, maybe even somewhat rude way to capture the kind of essence of some people who have these kinds of queries.
Questions, yeah.
So the question, as we're going to start it off today, is, so, well, isn't disability your medical problem? I mean, it's something about the person with the disability. So, you know, why does everyone else have to accommodate people with disabilities?
And it's something I get all the time.
Yeah.
My first answer always is, it's the law. It was required to do so. Yeah. We are a portion of society.
Absolutely.
And we have that right.
Yeah.
But going past the law, we are talking about basic human decency.
Absolutely.
We need people to understand how things are.
Yep.
That helping someone shouldn't be a negative.
Yeah.
That providing accommodations should just be standard.
Absolutely.
It shouldn't be something you have to fight for or sue for or argue for.
Mm-hmm.
It just should be done.
Should be done, freely. Yeah.
And we're starting to get there in some areas, but the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, is 32 going on 33 years old, and we're still fighting some of the same
battles.
Younger
than me, right? Younger than you. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I've heard... Oh, did you have something?
No, go ahead.
Yeah. I've heard, and I had to sit with this for a minute, but I have heard the idea around disability being a social construct. And I was taken aback by that at first, but then as I was reading and kind of looking into it, I hear what they're saying. And first of all, it's saying that what counts as an impairment is determined by our social norms and structures as much as they are about the realities of an individual's mind or body, and that people with disabilities are only disabled when needed physical and social resources in their environment are absent, right? So if we create a world that does not does not see folks with disabilities or does not see the diversity in the human experience. And it only creates environments for one way of being in the world, whether that's social, emotional, or physical. Of course, those that don't fit in those frames are going to be disabled, right?
Right. And just to add to that, mm-hmm. which I think you worded beautifully, but to make it just very concrete, mm-hmm. literally and mm-hmm. figuratively, mm-hmm. you know, you need the cutout in the curb we were talking about earlier because someone built a curb in the first place.
Right. Right.
And it was built not thinking of, oh, some people move forward on wheels rather right. than, you know.
And there's no one way to move.
Right.
And this is the idea of it being a social construct. Someone, you know, can't get up onto a curb only because the curb was put there in the first place.
Right.
And our laws even don't reflect disability.
Right.
For example, the federal firearms statute, which needs language needs to be changed, states that you are no longer allowed to carry a firearm because you've been judged mentally defective in a court of law. And yes, it uses the word mentally defective.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I'm not a car part.
Yeah.
This is not a defect
not a thing.
To fix.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And again, it goes back to that medical model of thinking that if you do not fit this average curve and fit these ideas of what normal, quote unquote, is, then you are defective. We need to fix you and get you to this normal curve rather than saying like, again, we have a world that of a variety of human experiences that includes social, emotional, and physical differences. Of course, racial, ethnic, sexuality, all of these other pieces too. And if we can do what so thinking about, there's a very short documentary by Netflix, and it is called How the ADA Changed the Built World. It's like 12 minutes, and it's talking about universal design, right? And again, the curb cutouts, elevators, like all of these things that were created because we needed to create accessibility for people that have disabilities. But if we can have this idea of universal design that accounts for the diversity of the human experience, it's going to be helpful for everyone.
Exactly. Right now at MMSD, one of the biggest arguments is if you're in a wheelchair, you have a pass to use the elevator and no one else could use it.
Mm.
Why?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So people could still get hurt and still need to use it.
Right.
Doesn't that violate like HIPAA too? Because then don't you have to disclose using the elevator, you're by definition disclosing your private medical information.
It would not be HIPAA because that's only insurance, but it would be FERPA. What's called FERPA.
FERPA. Oh, I'm sorry.
Family Education Right and Privacy Act. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm sounding dumb on this episode.
No, everyone does it.
I'm used to HIPAA because I do research.
Right.
Yeah. And medical systems. Yeah. It's the same basic premise.
But you have to disclose something. That you might not want to.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's your choice.
It's forced disclosure.
Right. And you know, like you said, like why, and I really appreciate it because I think if we go back to intent and impact, that sometimes I think that policies like that are saying like, well, we want to protect the use of this resource only for those who quote unquote really need it. And you're saying like, but this is a great accommodation for anybody that needs to use it. Why would we say nobody else can use this?
I had it at the Overture Center every time. This has happened multiple times at the Overture Center, which is, well, the elevator is only for those who are disabled enough to need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remind them every time.
Yeah.
For some reason, whenever I see Hamilton, someone brings up a disability issue.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because it's a show on freedom, but it happens.
something about Hamilton.
And it's like, no, I need to be able to use it. Yeah. I can't get down the stairs.
Right.
I don't have to tell you that.
Right. Right. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. That's really good. Well, thank you for that. I think that there's so much we could talk about.
Oh, God, yes.
We will have you back again.
Yes. but one of the other pieces that we do on the podcast is, like, as you know, is coming back to our bias habit breaking skills. So today, what is our skill today, Will?
So today we're going to talk about something called untested assumptions. Now, one of the aspects, one of the model that we work with is that awareness component, because we have to understand how our brain works, how our cognitive systems work. And one thing that our brain does is it really wants to preserve our mental habits. Once we have them in place, our brain thinks that's an efficient way of doing something. And there are some mechanisms in our brains that kind of help perpetuate those patterns. That's some of essentially what makes habits hard to break. So this concept of untested assumptions. So very often when stereotypes operate in everyday life, what happens is we're just going about our day and a stereotypic assumption pops to mind about someone. So one thing that on college campuses where Amber and I work a lot, one thing that happens often is people making assumptions about Black students and why they're at the university. They will make an assumption like, oh, that young Black man, someone will see a Black classmate and be like, oh, I bet he's on the basketball team. That's a common kind of assumption. What I want you to think about in this example is what happens after the assumption. So if you're walking by, think, oh, he's on the basketball team. Odds are you probably don't run up to him and then say, oh, hey, I just had an assumption about you. Like, are you on the basketball team? Am I right? Am I wrong? The assumption just sits in your mind. You don't actually verify or learn that it's incorrect. And that's what I mean by an assumption being untested. But the way your brain stores evidence, it really stores those assumptions as though they were valid evidence, when in fact, there's no evidence here at all. You don't know whether the your assumption was correct or incorrect. And this is what ends up happening. This is something that actually my research lab studied a lot. It relates to a learning process called Hebbian learning. We're just kind of making the assumption. It's kind of like a mental rehearsal. It's like you're rehearsing the stereotype for yourself just by making these assumptions and not learning about them one way or the other. So this is one of the things that makes a stereotype so strong in your brain and makes these habits hard to break. And when I do this training, the full training in person, there's actually a story I tell about how Nikki and I met. And she's smiling. She knows what the story is and has given me permission to tell it. So when I met Nikki, I was here in Madison, Wisconsin. It was at a bar. And I was sitting at a table with some friends at the bar, and this woman walks in. The person I would later learn is Nikki. And she's sort of stumbling as she walks kind of towards us in the bar. And so I want you to really just imagine you're in that situation. You're in a bar. Some woman you don't know is kind of stumbling as they walk towards you. What's the assumption you make, Amber?
Probably that they're drunk.
Yep. And that was definitely that quick stereotypic assumption that popped in my head. I was like, oh man, some drunk lady coming to bother us. Well, very luckily for me and for all of you listeners who get to learn from Nikki on the podcast, Nikki actually knew the people I was sitting with and came and joined us. And I was able to find out she was not drunk. As we've talked about on the podcast, she has cerebral palsy. And so she's not always steady on her feet. And very often it will stumble while walking, regardless of whether she's had a drink or not. And so this is a chance where luckily for me, I got my assumption tested and proven wrong. Got to meet Nikki and we've known each other 10 plus 11 years. Now I'm one of my favorite people, one of my best friends. Aww. But I want you to think about this untested assumptions notion. Let's say she didn't happen to know the person I was sitting with at the bar. I would have gone on thinking, oh, this drunk lady stumbling around the bar. If I saw her again, I'd be like, oh, this lady, she's always drunk. And she might stumble, might have been unsteady on her feet, and it would have perpetuated itself. And that's the thing we want to learn to recognize and short circuit. Ask yourself the question, like, how do I know this person's drunk in that example? Or how do I know that kid's a basketball player? Is he wearing basketball shorts? Is he carrying a basketball? Even those things aren't really perfect indicators. He could just be someone who likes playing it casually. But question these assumptions. Ask yourself, like, how do I know? And as you start doing that, very often you will start recognizing, you know, I think this is a stereotype rather than real evidence in the world I'm responding to. And asking that question is just such a good way to try to short circuit some of these bias habit processes.
Absolutely. It clinically, we would talk about reality testing. And so we do that both for ourselves and with others, right? So like I might have this thought, whether it's about myself or about somebody else. And then I'm like, I go, what is the evidence that I have to support this assumption or this thing that popped into my head?
Whether so like a depressed person might be like, no one wants to hang out with
exactly.
me. Well, test it, like reach out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What are the things, what evidence do I have that actually supports that I'm the worst human alive? Right. Like, is there evidence that actually supports this, or how do I test this? How can I reach out? And in things like this, the other thing that I often tell folks is, you know, for instance, with disability, thinking about what were my early messages around these things that mm-hmm. kind of gave me this assumption about somebody that looks or acts or walks or talks,
yes.
behaves a certain way. What were those early interactions that maybe I had, those early messages? Because that's what creates the assumptions and the stereotypes that we then begin to interact
yeah.
with other people on.
Oh, I figured out I was disabled before my parents told me. Mm. I was 3 and a half
mm-hmm.
shortly after diagnosis. Mm-hmm. You have not heard this story.
Mm. Mm. No.
And I had an at-home occupational therapist. Mm-hmm. I went into her house.
Mm.
And she was teaching her 18-month-old how to butter bread and me how to butter bread at the same time.
At the same time.
And he got it first.
Mm.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And I figured it out immediately. P.S. Yeah. That not a bottle is used anymore right. for right. that those but, kind of reasons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was like, mm-hmm. okay, there's something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also like what were those early messages? Okay, I'm 3 and I'm being taught the same thing as an 18-month-old, right? Yeah. Like here's some of these. So what does that mean about how I understand myself, right? And how I might somebody else see this?
I could read the directions. I could read a book yeah. at mm-hmm. the same age.
Wow.
Well, and with things like that, I like to think of getting to, like, if we're talking about with a child, mm-hmm. what's the most practical, concrete way to talk about it,
yep.
rather than the abstract. So the abstract yeah. way is something wrong with you,
yeah.
you can't do things.
Yeah.
Practical thing is, might take you a little longer to learn some of these mm-hmm. physical procedures.
Yeah.
I mean, procedures is probably too big a word for a little kid,
yeah.
But,
yeah.
but you know, it might take kid. You a little extra time.
You probably got that word.
and I think sometimes making it just very simple and practical.
And concrete.
Is mm-hmm. I was a counselor's kid, so I was the old, my mother was big on not labeling behavior.
Yeah.
So I was the only kid at 5 and 6 who was not naughty, but acting in an oppositionally defiant manner.
I love that. I love it.
Message I want to make sure we hit again, which relates to what Amber was mm-hmm. saying, is so you were talking about the early messages
yeah.
and so on. I want to bring back that phrase that one of you first uttered, and I apologize if I'm not giving the right credit, but presume competence.
Always.
Yeah.
So the untested kind of assumption yeah. is often going to be, oh, this person can't do that.
Yes.
Or, not even going to ask. Well,
right.
presume competence, one, yeah. and ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Is this something you're comfortable doing? Is
yes.
this, you know, is there a way
absolutely.
I can support you in doing this?
Yeah.
And this is something that Nikki and I do all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like if there's an incline, I ask like, Nikki, would you like my arm?
Yeah. yeah.
And sometimes she does. And sometimes she's like, no, I got this.
And
like,
that also brings up a key thing.
Yeah.
In our society right now, there's a habit of, I want to help people.
Right.
P.S. Yeah, ask first. Do not push someone's wheelchair.
Right.
Without
asking. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
may not be wanting to go that direction.
Right. And they may not need or want your help either.
And
right.
presume competence.
Right.
Exactly.
Like they're going to be better at rolling their wheelchair than you are as
right.
someone who doesn't use it every day.
Correct.
Like offer, mm-hmm. perhaps, mm-hmm. but presume that they've got it.
Yes.
And we all do, like I was grocery shopping. This was during a pandemic, and I asked the individual, would you like some help or not on reaching? He looked at me and he's like, yeah. You're the first person who actually gave me a choice.
Choice, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. I have CP. He's like, oh, got it.
Got it.
Never got mind.
It. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, there's the importance there is asking and how you're asking too, right? Like, would you like some support? Do you, you know, and rather than
let me get
can
this,
you do this
or let me
or
do
let
this,
me do
for,
this
you.
For you? Yeah. Yeah. It's presuming competence and it's offering like, hey, would you like some support in this area? Do
yep.
you need, you know, instead of, you know, can you do this or let me do this for you?
Yep.
And also being patient too. Like it might take somebody a little bit longer to communicate something. And I think that that's take a little bit longer to get from point A to point B. And that's where somebody thinking that they're being helpful comes in oftentimes is they want to speed it up or like, oh, it's going to take you too long to do this. Well, things take different amounts of time. Let folks do it at their own pace.
Well, I have that problem a lot. I have a dear friend of mine, Mike Hipple, who uses the AAC device. And I have constantly...
What's an AAC device for our listeners?
AAC device is a device that speaks for you. You use your eye gaze. Mm-hmm. It's called an eye gaze. And on a computer, you use your eye to talk, find the letters at a keyboard to be mm-hmm. able to talk.
Yeah.
Now, I am horribly always cutting off Mike. Because I forget it takes him longer
takes a
to get
time. Yeah.
the words. And he has to say, slow down, Nikki. Now.
We interrupt mm-hmm. each other on this show, too.
Yeah, we do.
but yeah, the patience.
Yes.
It's taught me a lot on how to slow down.
Yeah.
And I think the media influences on this us in this because TV shows, it's always conversation has to happen and then we're, you know, reaching the drama or whatever, and then it goes to the next scene and then it's the Mission Impossible action sequence and it's like we're always like everything has to be go. You know what? In the real world, if you're not like an emergency medical person or something, generally you can probably take a little more time to get somewhere. Most of us are not in a life or death split second kind of profession.
And if you are, that's a different.
That's that definitely.
Actually, that's one of the few areas, and you brought up an interesting point, in which disability accommodation does not need to be followed.
Mm-hmm.
There was a case of a deaf woman who only signed, who wanted to be an ER nurse. Mm. And the courts ruled that because she could not communicate in a manner same as everyone else that could cause a life or death reaction. It was one of the few times that they were allowed to say no.
But she could still be a nurse.
She could be a nurse and she could other department.
Yeah.
She just could not be in the ER.
Right.
Because it needed to be instantaneous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can understand.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So, one thing we like to always wrap up with in our goal, again, to infuse joy into these conversations, which we do not just in our cool
in
costumes
our
that we're wearing.
Today. They are pretty amazing. They are pretty amazing, yes.
This is incredibly comfortable.
But actually related to Nikki's costume today, I believe is her recommendation. So something that brings you joy that you want to share, tell us about why.
Yes. Recommendation.
My Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie is 1, 2, and 3, especially Rocket Raccoon.
Yes. Guardians of the Galaxy. What do you love about them?
I am a 3-foot-tall anthropomorphic raccoon. Whoa. I have to admit it. Rocket and I relate because he accepts who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He knows who he is, what he wants, and that he's different.
Yeah.
And he really doesn't give a dang about it.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing like him but him.
That's huge because we're always getting the message, blend in.
Mm.
Rocket ain't blended.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want to blend.
Yeah.
No.
Or in the Christmas special, as a Jew, yes, I watch Christmas specials. Christmaka is a big thing.
Yes.
And
Christmaka.
Thank you, the OC who coined the term. And I shamelessly steal it as often as I can. But I like it because it shows different ways of belief and actions to help other people. Mm-hmm. Now, Rocket isn't used to helping people. At the same point, you show he really is. How he takes care of Groot.
Yeah.
How he provides things.
Yeah.
How he's going to make sure that Quill has a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that are important to him.
Yeah.
Now, he's not going to admit it.
And he's going to do it with an attitude. But it's happening because it's coming from his heart.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he probably has one of the biggest hearts there is. And if no spoilers, but if you watch the third one, you find out.
Yes, absolutely.
Quite a bit.
Yes.
So, Guardians of the Galaxy, all three volumes. Christmas special.
And
great recommendation.
And the soundtracks are
amazing.
Solid, yes.
So, those are streaming on Disney Plus. Wrapping us up for today. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki.
I'm Dr. William Cox.
And I'm Dr. Amber Nelson.
And today's guest was Nikki Vandermeulen, produced by Eric Roman Bining. with music by Jay Arner. Diverse Joy is consumable as either an audio-only podcast or a video podcast, both accessible at diversejoy.com. Diverse Joy is the official podcast of Inequity Agents of Change, a nonprofit devoted to the dissemination of evidence-based approaches to reduce bias, create inclusion, promote equity, and enhance diversity. All that good Jedi work. Learn more at biashabit.com. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.